Good morning, Pensacola. It's Tuesday, July 5th. We're starting this week on a Tuesday, so we're that much closer to Friday, which is always works well. What, you know, a lot of rain over the weekend, but just the patriotic spirit of the community was just huge yesterday. Everyone was epic. Protocol fails everywhere, wearing flags on it, which is not supposed to be protocol, but they were wearing them proudly. Red, white, and blue was everywhere. It was, downtown was lively throughout the entire weekend. We've got a great show lined up for you. We're going to start it with high energy all the way through it. But I wanted to point out that this week, 15 years ago, 2007, was the week that Rick's blog was ranked the number one most influential blog in the state of Florida. Of course, that web address is ricksblog.net. And we were going up against blogs in huge cities around the state. And there was a service called, it was called BlogNet News. And they, somehow they had an algorithm that they could measure how your reach throughout your community. And we had the highest reach of any blog in the state. Now, that was really before Facebook had just opened up to the public the year before. Remember, Facebook, if you may not remember, but Facebook was solely a college for college students. It was how they related to each other, connected with each other. It was sort of like a version of digital version of a yearbook. And that's how Facebook started. And it had only really started to, the public was starting just barely getting involved in 2007. MySpace was still big, but blogs were the thing. The blog is still going 15 years later. It is still influential. Some of those that are on that list aren't even around anymore, but somehow the blog has kept going. So this was the week 15 years ago that this little bitty blog in this little town was considered the most influential in the state of Florida. Not bad. Not bad. And we're still around. All right, let's go ahead. We're going to give you the news, traffic, and weather. When we come back, we'll have Commissioner Jeff Burgosh, and we'll be talking about mental health. Not necessarily his, but that of the community. We'll be right back. You're listening to Pensacola's first radio station, your radio station, WCOA 1370, WCOA 104.9 FM.
The 5th of July, and on this day in 2004, it was the 50th anniversary of this song, but they re-released it, and it went to number 3 in England again.
Well, my brain is not working correctly today, and you'll notice it, and we'll figure it out as the day is going on. The web address for the blog is ricksblog.biz, not net. I don't know why I said that, but that's kind of the way the day is going for me. Another blog that has been very influential and a great way of getting what's happening behind the scenes in politics in the community is Jeff Burgosh's blog. This, on Friday, he gave sort of a synopsis of some of the meetings last week, particularly what was happening in the mental health task force. I'd asked Jeff if he'd come on this morning. So we've got Commissioner Jeff Burgosh on the line. Good morning, Jeff.
Good morning, Rick, and thank you for recognizing that. And particularly the mental health task force meeting, which sadly did not get any coverage until Sunday, and then only one small component of the meeting was covered. But it was covered in the Sunday paper, which was good. But frankly, to be very honest, while I'm very proud of what the sheriff's office and West Marino and IT from the county have put together with the dashboard, the bigger story is the ongoing silent epidemic of these overdoses in Escambia County.
Right.
Didn't get any coverage at all. What are your thoughts on that, Rick? Why is that almost like embargoed?
Well, I mean, on our end, we were shorthanded with the holidays, so we were trying to move a lot of different directions. I got on my list to call Dave Torsell because of what he's finding out about it. But it has been silent. I mean, we've heard a little bit about the fentanyl epidemic through town and what that's causing, because that's taking the heroin and the drugs, illegal drugs that are being sold, to a new level. But this is the overdoses. I didn't realize it was that bad, Jeff. I mean,
horrible.
Five a day? It's amazing.
Yeah, 5.6, to be very, very accurate. You know, more than 1,024 so far this year. And the sad thing, Rick, is they're putting it in everything. You know, it's a horribly dangerous thing to take any kind of illicit drugs, street drugs. You don't know where it's coming from. I mean, and we know about the opioids that folks get prescribed legally and then they abuse. But these pills are coming over, and you might think you're getting ecstasy, and it's loaded up with fentanyl. You never wake up. Or you might get something like cocaine or some upper, and come to find out it's been laced with fentanyl, and you never wake up. And, you know, Fox News had an hour special on, I want to say, Sunday morning about the fentanyl crisis. We need to do that here locally. And there was great information put out. One of the things that was fascinating to me, Rick, was, you know, just what an overdose looks like. And according to a medical doctor who was on their show, she said, look, you might mistake it for someone who's drank too much because it's calms you down, it settles you down, but your breathing becomes shallow because your body can't breathe. So folks see you and they go, well, let them sleep it off. When you let them sleep it off, they're going to die. So, you know, there's a lot of folks in the community working hard. I got to give props to Michelle Salzman putting together the task force because all these things are intimately intertwined. You've got the homelessness issue, a lot of mental health challenges there, a lot of addiction there. You've got this generational dysfunction and poverty. People don't have enough money. They start slinging drugs. We've had that. That's been a massive issue in the community for a long time. It was a big issue in the schools. I've been talking about it for a long time. But now you add to the mix 2 years of just this gloom and doom depression with COVID. Now you got a recession. It's a perfect mix. It's a recipe for problems. And we got to start talking about it, Rick.
We do. And I think that's one of the great outcomes, even if, you know, just the fact that we're having a mental health task force, and these numbers are coming out on a regular basis. Typically, we would have to wait, you know, the year would have to be over before we got any sort of numbers of what was really happening in the system. The EMS, I mean, Escambia County, y'all, so you're so much more transparent than the years before, so we know they're, you know, Eric Gilmore, Dave Tursell, their group are doing a great job of getting information out, which we haven't had in the past. But this sort of explains too the stress. If you're having 5.6 overdoses a day, and it doesn't average out that way. Some days they're probably having two or three dozen in a day. Some days it might be quiet. But the stress on EMS is got to be really, really tough.
Well, here's a stark example, Rick. Here's a stark example. The other night we had a young woman in one of our restaurants out in District 1 in Perdido Key. And, you know, she had a medical situation. Now, you know, at that very same time, we had a series of events that led to a cascade, frankly, to failure. But part of it was the opioid problem. We had two overdoses simultaneously. People were dying of an overdose. We had a cardiac arrest. We had a gunshot wound. Two people called out. So here is where national politics, national policy issues come home to roost in Escambia County. You know, we're the westernmost county on the panhandle. The I-10, everyone knows, is a drug route. It's a human smuggling route. Just Google I-10, right, and you'll find all kinds of information. So here we are. It's coming here. And these national politics that are allowing the border to be wide open and busted, because it is, they're packing this stuff in people's bodies, in bags. It's extremely dangerous. You've got, you know, Chinese fentanyl coming over the border. It's well established. Rick Scott, to his credit, has a new policy out. He's a policy proposal. It's on his website. People should check that out, because there are some people paying attention, but a lot of folks, you know, they're just it's business as usual. And meanwhile, our medical examiner's been screaming about this for a long time. And, you know, it's geometric, Rick. 37,000 nationwide opioid overdoses in 2019. 57,000 in 2020. In 2021, it jumped geometrically to over 100,000. So what's it going to be in 2022? Right. It's a very stark situation that we're dealing with. So I'm so thankful that you've taken the time to spotlight it this morning.
Well, one thing in your post that is at least a ray of hope is that the county is working with Community Health Northwest with Suboxone, a drug that can help withdrawals for addicts. And Community yes. Health's been able to plug into, you know, a federal, well, you know, a pretty big program where they can get this relatively inexpensively to help the addicts that are in our community.
Yes, absolutely. But of course, even that is precarious. I mean, you know, there are medical professionals that will tell you that has a high likelihood of being abused if you have someone that has the tendency right. for addiction, and you're not very carefully coordinating that Suboxone along with ongoing counseling and guidance.
Right.
It has potential to be abused. A lot of doctors won't, for that reason, will not prescribe it. So it's a dangerous game of roulette that you're playing, but you're right. $30 for a prescription, it's a very high-cost drug. again, props to Michelle Salzman, props to Community Health Northwest. Dave Torsell, our guy, is just a rock star, just killing it out there. But the sad thing is, you know, we're doing all these things. We're putting Narcan out, Health and Hope Clinic's putting Narcan out for free, and all hands on deck, and yet still we're having this problem. So it just means we've got to redouble our efforts. We've got to do more, but we've got to get more attention onto the issue. We've got to get this message into schools. I'm going to talk to the chairman of the school board, Kevin Adams, today about this. And hopefully at the next meetings, maybe he can get this out. People just have to know, because this isn't just happening to poor people. This is happening to every segment of our community is feeling the impact of this.
Right. It's you know, we've written about it quite a bit over the years as we saw it happening around the country, and people didn't think it was here, and it was, and it is. The magnitude has gotten so great. But you're right, the Suboxone works best when it's in a counseling situation, because those conditions that made someone want to take the opioid still exist. And you've got to deal with the person as a whole. There's no magic bullet. It really needs to be done in conjunction with counseling, and where it's been most successful in the recovering addicts that I've talked to and the doctors I've talked to, they've all said that it's got to be done holistically. I kind of hate to use that buzzword, but it has to be done in such a way that you have to look at the entire situation. Just prescribing the meds, it can become as addictive as the opioid that it's replacing, and because it's just opioids are just so dangerous. The way they plug into your brain, the addictive nature of it, it's just not something you can quit. There are very few cases of somebody able to just quit on their own without any sort of help.
You can't kick the sheets on that one without help. You really can't. It's just incredibly. And can I just point out one thing? I know you're short on time. I'm about to get to break, but I just want to say this. You know, we take a lot of heat for a lot of things, and deservedly so, as a county, as county commissioners, as a county. But we at least are in this fight. We're working with Michelle Salzman and the task force. You've seen what Bart and Wes have done with the dashboard. We're working with our health partners to recruit more mental health counselors to treat these underserved. And the money that our guy, Dave Torsell, went and got, that's going to make a big impact. And, of course, you know, Michelle's been out there raising money from hospitals and even county commissioners. I chipped in $5,000 for my discretionary. You know, you got to put together a group. You got to talk about it a lot. My blog post is getting crushed. That's a good thing. It has a big number of hits. I want people to look at it. It's not good news. It's not always good to be number one, Rick. It's not always a good thing.
Right.
And so, you know, I appreciate your time on the radio this morning and, you know, whatever you can do to promote this. And I hope at the next mental health task force, I'm going to call my friend Randy Wood, and I'm going to say, look, man, you need to have a camera crew there, because this is important. This isn't hot dogs and fireworks. This is people's lives, and this is important. And hopefully it'll get a lot more attention.
Well, I'm sure it will. Jeff, thank you so much for coming on this morning. Have a great week.
Yes, sir. You as well. Thanks, Rick.
All right. Take care. It is. Go to Jeff's blog, Jeff Ragosh blog, blogspot.com. The mental health task force, if it does nothing but get us everyone in the room and talking about what's really going on, I think that is huge. The dashboard that Jeff is talking about is one that the News Journal is writing about, which is going to be a homeless shelter dashboard. So if someone who's homeless and they have a laptop, they'll be able to find a shelter, I guess, is how that'll work. We'll see. I'm sorry. It is one of those weeks for me. Stacy, thank you so much for coming. Did you have a good 4th?
Oh, yeah, I did. Did
you see any fireworks anywhere?
Oh, yeah. We walked outside my dad's house and saw a bunch of fireworks. I don't know if they were legal or not, but we saw a bunch of them, though. I don't want to get anybody in trouble, though.
Okay, well, great. Good to have you in. Thank you for doing
it,
Stacy.
Glad to be here.
Listen, today is July 5th. This is the day that Community Health has the vaccine available for children 5 and under. And they have set it up in the perfect way to do it, in that you can sit down with the pediatrician and talk through the vaccine, all the pluses and the minuses, and you can make a decision with your doctor. So this isn't a mass operation. This is a one-on-one operation for a parent with a pediatrician. You could do it with Community Health two ways. If you're already a patient of Community Health, and it's going to be available to all the pediatric offices around the two-county area, you know, you can call, go ahead and set up an appointment. If you're not a client, you're not a patient of Community Health, you still can get the vaccine. You just need to call their vaccine call center, which is 850 439 3358. You can go to Community Health, go to their website. You can find out this information. But if you've got a child or a grandchild, or you're taking care of someone, you're the guardian of them, and they haven't been able to get a vaccine yet because they're too young, this is the way to go about it. So Community Health is open today. I know they have appointments available, so call them, get it set up, and have a good conversation with a pediatrician. Let's take the politics out of it. All right, we're Real News. We're going to go ahead and take a break, give you some more local news, weather, and traffic, and we'll be right back. In the middle of the pouring rain. Thank you for joining us. We're Real News with Rick Alston.
Like this. Happy birthday, Mark Cohen. He was born on this day in 1959, actually in Cleveland. He is not a Mississippi boy.
Gosh. You go to Ole Miss, you know, and you grew up in the Mississippi Delta. Memphis is special to you. And this song is one of those songs that just really captures the city, brings back great memories of that town. That's actually where my parents, they went on their honeymoon at the Peabody Hotel.
Oh.
That, you know, danced.
Saw the ducks.
Saw the ducks, danced in the ballroom at the top of the hotel. So Memphis is special to us for a lot of reasons because of that. Over the years, I've done COA several times, but I used to do Pensacola Speaks in the afternoon, and I had the opportunity a few years ago to interview Wilmer Mitchell. He was the attorney of Bob Snow, who started Seville Quarter. Actually, it was Rosie O'Grady's, then became the Seville Quarter Entertainment Complex. He took it over with his family. They have been running it for quite some time now. But I wanted to get Wilmer into the studio to talk about the history of Seville Quarter. And this, for me, was a special interview. I found it. I was digging through some old files and came up with it. And I thought, this is something that I'd love to share with you. So it's going to be, this is about, gosh, five or six years ago. And you're going to hear me talk about Pensacola Speaks. But this is Wilmer Mitchell. Let's go ahead and play it, Zena. I'm on someone. You're listening to Pensacola Speaks on News Talk 1370 WCOA. I'm Rick Alston, your host, publisher, and owner of the Independent News. I have got a great guest lined up, one I've been sort of excited about. A few weeks ago, we sat down and had lunch at Seville and just started talking about the history of Seville Quarter. You may not realize, but it's not too far off from celebrating its 50th anniversary. It opened up in 1967 with Bob Snow, who got out of the military, jazz musician. The man who was with him pretty much all the way is Wilmer Mitchell, who now owns this with his family. He's the president of the Seville Complex. Wilmer, welcome to the show.
Glad to be here.
All right, tell us about who was Bob Snow.
Bob Snow was in naval aviation training and got injured in a car wreck. But he was also a trumpet player, and he had put together a band, the South Hangar Six, I think they called themselves, and they were performing around town, and he was planning to stay in Pensacola. He's from Minnesota, Snow is not his real name. But it has been for 47 years that I've known him. But he was playing all around Pensacola, and everybody was noticing, and they said he wants to come to Pensacola and open up a saloon, a beer and peanuts type saloon. And everybody said, well, nobody is doing anything in Pensacola downtown, but that's where he's looking.
Because everything was out in the mall area, wasn't it? And
everything that was not in the mall was on its way to the mall.
Right.
And that included some downtown merchants and all that. Anyway, Bob, we knew of him. He was growing a mustache. That's one thing. And he looked like a riverboat gambler, a young one, but a riverboat gambler. And he found a place he could lease with an option to buy, which is where Rosie O'Grady's is. And he was working hard to get it open.
That was on East Government. It was just a bunch of warehouses on East Government at that time, wasn't it?
Is yeah.
That part of it? Right.
The place was a cigar and tobacco warehouse.
Right, right.
And some other things over the years, which we won't get into that perhaps. But he that's not the one he wanted, but it's all he could tie up with a a lease, and he did that. And one night I was working on Government Street about a block and a half away on West Government, and I was getting ready to go home about 6:30. I'm a lawyer at that time, and still am, actually. And this fella came to the door, and I knew who it was. And he said, my name is Bob Snow. And I said, I know who you are. What can I do for you? And I said, I was just getting ready to leave. He said, at this hour, we haven't even had lunch yet. It was 7 o'clock at night, because his hours were of like that. And at any rate, he said, somebody tells me you should be my lawyer. And he still thinks I am to this day his lawyer, although I retired after 52 years and devoted myself to civil quarter and to retirement. At any rate, he had these big dreams about doing this thing, and I thought, well, that's fun, because we were just getting into the historic district being appreciated and the beginnings of what became a real movement, which is a very remarkable when you think that at the time we were opening Seville Square and trying to get people to invest downtown,
right,
and
right,
having the evening in Old Seville, which we were all in on that. At that same time, everybody was leaving downtown and going elsewhere. And
right. We were Pensacola Speaks, News Talk, 1370 WCOA. The voice you're hearing is Wilmer Mitchell. His family, they own Seville Quarter. We're talking about Bob Snow when he started this back in 1967. You know, he hardly had any money to start it.
I'm probably told you that story.
Yeah. Well, you could tell me again.
All right, he was working, and it was everybody was getting very interested, because we were right next door to where the Pensacola Buggy Works was.
Right.
And a lot of people know where Seville Quarter is now, and that this was in the middle of that. And he came by one day, and he was supposed to be opening. It was in August. And he looked at me, and he said, I don't think I'm going to make it. And I said, well, what do you mean? We see you're going around. You're making money around town, playing, and everybody, and we're looking forward to it. Nothing's happening. You're it. He said, well, the air conditioning man won't finance the air conditioning. And I said, well, why not? He said, well, because he just won't. And he promised he would, but he won't. I said, well, how much is it? He said, $3,500. And I said, these people around want to be partners. I said, you don't need any partners. If you're looking for a partner, you're looking at me, and especially if it doesn't take any more than that. So I said, well, how much do you owe? And he said, owe? I said, yeah, how much money have you already spent? He said, nothing. I said, where's your bank? He said, I don't have one. I said, you will in a few minutes. And so he and I walked out the back door of the office where we were and walked across to the C&P Bank.
Right. So for our listeners, C&P Bank, it's where Janet Holly is now,
right,
with C&P Bank on Paula Fox. The old courthouse was right next door.
And Ordens was just north of
right,
it.
Right, exactly.
And I had worked there for 8 years, so I knew where that was. And at any rate, we went in to talk to Roger Doyle, a vice president, related to the owners of the bank, and had him share himself. And at any rate, Bob laid out that he needed this $3,500, and Roger's very encouraging, because I know what you're doing. It's exciting. Everybody's looking forward to it. He said, but you know, restaurants and bars, they close. They're bad, hard loans. He said, okay, I'm not going to lend you $3,500. I'm not going to do that. And we looked at him like, why not? And he said, because, dummy, you're going to need some money in the till. I'm going to lend you $5,000. He did. The place opened on time in that time frame of August. And Snow came in the day after it opened and paid off the loan.
Wow.
And so it was going pretty good at that time.
We've got Wilmer Mitchell. We are News Talk 1370 WCOA. Pensacola Speaks. We're talking about the beginning of Rosie's Seville Quarter, what downtown was like. You know, to me, which is that Pensacola actually got excited about a project, that the community wanted to see it happen, that the bank stepped in, and that from there, I mean, because we were talking a little bit in the break, when I was in college, this is when we came to Pensacola, everyone knew Rosie's was where you needed to go, and it was always such a fun place. How did it expand from being just the ragtime band, picnic tables and peanuts on the floor to multiple restaurants there? How did that, or bars there? How did that change?
Well, Bob always had big dreams. huge dreams. And he wanted to acquire property when it was vacant mm-hmm. property. And so he was a big success. By the way, I got to tell you that I was there on opening night. So this, I was sitting right in the middle next to Dickie Merritt, who was furnishing the beer, and next to a lot of other people right. cooperating. And on that night when he opened, it was a Friday night, I think, and he could serve beer and peanuts and a few other things, but no alcohol. And the place was packed. But luckily I had a reserved seat right in front. And there were about 400 people in the street waiting to get in.
Wow.
And then Snow is a dramatist, you know, he's, and from upstairs, down the stairs, that was where the band was. We didn't know that because Tootie Lockhart was a great banjo player.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, world class. And his brother Bert, who played the strings, who was a good string bass player, they came out on the stage first, about 8 o'clock. And they played Dear One, the World is Waiting for the Sunrise. And they played it very gently and all that, and the crowd quieted down. And all of a sudden, the trumpets blared, and looked over, and Bob Snow was at the head of the stairs with all the brass and the clarinets and the drummers and everything, and they came down the stairs, and the whole place...
I got goosebumps just hearing this.
The whole place stood up. Stood up at 8 o'clock at night, and nobody sat down until 2 o'clock the next morning.
Oh, that's great. We have Wilma Mitchell. We're talking about Seville Quarter, the great Bob Snow, who founded it. The Mitchell family has taken it on from there. It is from a different era, 1967. I guess we're a year away, year and a half, 18 months away from that 50th anniversary. Bob went from Rosie O'Grady's, and then he started to acquire the warehouses that were around it. Tell us just a little bit about that, how he came up with that concept.
Well, he said, I want to buy the place I'm in. So we closed the option to purchase on Rosie O'Grady's.
Right.
That was the first step. Next door was the print shop.
Mm-hmm.
It had been closed for 2 years with an IRS padlock on the door. So we bought that without too much trouble, because it had been vacant for years, and it right. was, by the way, it had an inch and a half of printer's ink on the floor. So that was a big project. And then it was going better and better. He put...
Phineas Fogg?
Lily Marlane's.
Lily Marlane's.
And he built to the back, which the end of the alley bar.
Right.
And he had the pool hall.
Right.
And Fast Eddie's. And actually, he didn't have that, did he? Coppersmith's Galley to begin with.
Right.
The restaurant. So he got that open, and then he said, I got to have the place next door. Mr. Isidore Silverman owned it and used it as an office, private hideaway office. It wasn't open. It wasn't built. People come in now and they say, oh, I love this old building, talking about where
the upper deck and all that.
Yeah, not that part, where the trusses are in Apple Annie's.
All right, okay, I got
it. And it was a beautiful room and it looked great and had all these. They said, aren't these old places wonderful? And I said, well, truthfully, that was nothing but a chinaberry tree and some dirt when Bob Snow bought this. But everything you see in this room comes from somewhere, and he went and found it.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be the Ursuline Convent for the big doors at the north end.
Wow.
That would be the casino
right.
on Pensacola Beach. Jerry Browder.
Casino Beach.
Yeah.
Right.
He said he was a big friend of Bob's and mine, my roommate in college. And he said, I got just what you want. And Snow said, what is it? And he said, the trusses from the old casino.
Oh,
and Bob
God.
Jumped on those, and they're up there now. And there was all kinds of other stuff. It's too long to get into, but everything you see in that room, he found most of it when nobody else was using it
right.
and incorporated it. And the story goes on. But we did get that property from Mr. Silverman, which is a whole wonderful story by itself.
Well, you know, it has become, Seville Quarter was before... You know, we've seen downtown. We have Wilmer Mitchell, the president of Seville Quarter Complex. We're talking about Bob Snow in the beginning of Rosie O'Grady's, how it grew, where Pensacola speaks. The other thing that has been fascinating to me, and we've got about 4 minutes, which is not fair to ask you a question and only give you 4 minutes. But the but I think you can handle it. But is just, you know, downtown was ups and downs through that period because, you know, it had a it was you know, Rosie's was hotly successful, then it changed hands and it kind of faltered a little bit, and then your family came back and y'all took it and really sort of restored it to where it was. That was a risk for your family to step in.
Bob knew all along that if he ever sold it, he ought to sell it to me.
Mm-hmm.
Although I was not I was a lawyer.
Right.
But I was his lawyer. And he knew that. And eventually, when nobody else would buy it, he sold it to me and my family. And we, all my children, and some of their spouses, and my own spouse, are working there. And that's part of what makes it work. But the whole story, he acquired more property after that, right, after Apple Annie's, too. The property where Phineas Foggs was another story, and he expanded that far. We expanded after we bought him out, which he sold it to us on favorable terms.
Right. Well, this happened here, he went to Orlando, had Church Street Station in Orlando. Then he got into the casino business and got out of the casino business in Vegas. But it's what's Bob Snow doing now?
He lives in Orlando, has his nice home. He made really big success,
right,
out of Orlando.
He really did.
And he took a lot of that success to Las Vegas and left it out there. But he's still alive and kicking and a terrific guy. I think the world of him. I hope he doesn't call me because he always needs something. But what he needs is usually very valuable, too. And so that's a long story.
But he seems to be such an idea guy. I mean, he really, when you and I've talked about him before, he just always seemed to just have great big ideas.
Oh, my word. You wouldn't believe it, how big his ideas are. We could never get him to go to New Orleans. We wanted him to go there, and he wanted to go. He spent $280,000 after he was doing well on a plan to go at the end of Poydras Street Wharf.
Mm-hmm.
But it fell through because they would not do what he wanted in the way of design. And he said, if they won't do it the way that I want to do it, we ain't going to do it. And that's a good thing he did, because the way they were going to do it wasn't going to work.
Well, now it is, though. They've created the whole warehouse district, and they've created the river walk down there now. But he was ahead of his time.
Yeah, but he wasn't going to do that. He wasn't going to do that. He was going to do something very different than that.
Well, Wilmer, thank you so much for coming on the show. I really, truly appreciate it. We'll have to do it again. We'll do some more. We need to talk more about the rest of downtown. I know you've got more stories to tell.
Oh, too many.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show.
My pleasure.
We are Pensacola Speaks on News Talk 1370 WCOA. We'll be right back. We are Pensacola's radio station, started in City Hall almost 100 years ago, and we're still on the air. We're WCOA, 1370 AM, 104.9 FM.
And it is July 5th. It's my mom's birthday. Happy birthday, Mom. I hope you're listening. Also, on this day in 1955, this song right here, Maybelline by Chuck Berry, was released with Chuck Berry's name on the record as a copyright alone, but then Alan Freed, the disc jockey, they added his name as a form of payola. And we can't do those sort of things anymore.
No. I tried to get him to name part of Seville Quarter for me, but it didn't work. Wasn't it great listening to Wilmer Mitchell?
That was great.
He just what a great storyteller and part of Pensacola history. 10 years ago, I was going back and looking at the blog, ricksblog.biz. This week is the 10th anniversary of World of Beer coming downtown. It was July 4th, 2012, on a Wednesday, that Scott Zepp and Matt LaFon, both high school graduates of Gulf Breeze High School, Scott's class of 92, Matt is 94, they were both baseball players. They started World of Beer in Tampa, then were able to franchise it. I think they were working with the Outback Group, and who ended up buying them in the end, but they became nationwide. Wanted to open up one here. They opened it in the iconic Abbott Uniform Building, right there in the corner of Intendencia and Palafox. It had been a blues club for a while. Blazoos was the name of it. It was a blues club for a while. Never quite made it. And then World of Beer came in, and it became a hit right away. People were willing to buy $7 to $8 beers. It was the place where politicians could go and become invisible when they were in there. No one would see them, or so they thought.
Okay.
Yeah, we had an old city manager, Bill Reynolds, that did a lot of things there that he thought that no one would ever see him do. And, of course, he's left town. But World of Beer, it has grown. You've got Blend, which is a cocktail bar behind World of Beer attached to it. You've got Taco Guave. It's Mexican tacos, street tacos. You've got Graffiti Pizza right across the parking lot from it. They have bought the Pelican's Nest behind it, so we'll see what they're going to do next. All right, we're going to go ahead and give you the national news. When we come back, we're going to have Mayor Grover Robinson and Jim Ryan about giant snails in Florida. Killer snails on the loose. You know, there's the thing about Motown that just so smooth. Marvin Gaye, we are WCOA. I'm Rick Alton. This is Real News. It is it's a Tuesday, so we don't have that far to go to Friday. When we come back from this news break, we're going to have local news, traffic, and weather. We'll have Mayor Grover Robinson. We'll also have Jim Ryan with ABC. There's snails. The snails. It is a bad drive-in movie happening in Pasco County. We'll talk about it. We also know today is the 10th anniversary of when the University of West Florida bought Scenic Hills Country Club. A series of business moves that didn't go so well for the university. It was all the plot or the genius of Matt Altier, who was the CEO of Business Enterprises, Inc., which was going to be the business development side of UWF. Matt's no longer there, but don't feel sorry for him. He is having his fifth anniversary. He is of being the president of the LSU Health Foundation in New Orleans, so he landed on his feet well, and of course, University of West Florida is just soaring right now. As all the metrics are coming in that are positive, the growth on the university. Football is going to be on campus. You look at the School of Engineering and Sciences and Logistics and all the things that they're doing there. We've seen the university do really, really well. But this was when the Business Enterprises, Inc., UWF's, going to be their big development wing started, and their first big purchase was the Scenic Hills Country Club. I'm not sure if they still own it. I think they do, but it's never quite worked out the way they thought it would. All right, we're going to go ahead and give you the local news, weather, and traffic. When we come back, we'll have Jim Ryan and then Mayor Grover Robinson. Welcome back. We are 1370 WCOA, also 104.9 FM.
Little Jane's Addiction on a Tuesday morning. It's July 5th, and on this day in 2003, the Lollapalooza Tour returned for the first time since 97. With the original headliners, Jane's Addiction here. It didn't do real well, though. The tour limped along, had poor ticket sales, and lots of canceled shows. They eventually played the Luna Fest.
Oh, that's right. They did.
I was actually at the Palafox Market this weekend where somebody asked me, what is the Luna Fest? Because I was wearing my Luna Fest hat, and I had to explain.
So sad. So sad we have to explain it. All right, listen, Lincoln Park neighborhood, they're going to have a cleanup this weekend on July 8th. We'll go through the details a little bit later. But the big story right now, Pasco County has got killer snails coming through town, and they're under quarantine, at least parts of them are. And we've got Jim Ryan with some of the details. Hey, Jim.
Morning, Rick. Yeah, it's a fascinating story to me, at least. And if you see Google images of these things or video, they're fascinating. They're about the size of your fist. It's the giant African land snail. They're not native to any place except Africa. Certainly not to Pasco County, but that's where one was found in late June. It's based on almost certainty that there are others there. And so that part of Pasco County, Port Richey over there by the coast, has been put under quarantine. That means that people there cannot move soil around from one part of the county to another or into a different county, or certainly if they find one of these things, they can't move it around, and any plants that might have come into contact with it. So it's a serious thing. They had a similar infestation that was just knocked out, eradicated last year. Took 10 years to get it done, Rick.
Well, what now? What kind of danger is the snails? What can it do?
Well, there are three things that it can do. First of all, it eats about 500 different plants that live in that part of Florida. So, in other words, it can be devastating to the ecology, to the ecosystem. It can pass meningitis to people. It carries a parasite that can bring meningitis to people. It also likes to eat stucco and concrete. So it can do damage to your home. It's a triple threat, Rick.
Wow. What's Pasco County trying to do? Before you go, Jim, what's Pasco County trying to do? How can they?
Well, besides the quarantine, of course, the state is coming in, the Agriculture Department. They're using metaldehyde, which is an effective killer of snails. And so they're trying to knock this thing out again. But it's expected to take several years and several million dollars. Every time there's an infestation, it takes years to knock it out, and it takes a lot of money right now.
Wow. Well, we'll stay on top of it. It's probably going to be there'll be a drive-in movie in the future of the snails, I'm sure.
Well, there ought to be, because the thing is fascinating, it's weird-looking, and it's scary.
Okay, great. Jim, thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks, Rick.
All right, take care. Jim Ryan in a wind tunnel. This is serious, and I should take it seriously. Fortunately, I'm not, but it is. We figured that there will probably be an Andy Marlett column about the killer snails in our future. You definitely know it won't be an editorial, because the daily newspaper here, once daily newspaper, only does editorials very, very rarely. In fact, I think we've had more editorials in the first half of the year from Palm Beach, their newspaper, than from our two-person editorial board. They're just overwhelmed. I don't know by what. It could be killer snails. We'll see if that happens. We're waiting for Grover Robinson to call in. I know he had another meeting, and he's probably trying to find a payphone to give us a call in. So we see if we can get him in. But I tell you who we do have on the line is we've got Lee Davis with Santa Rosa Island Authority. Good morning, Lee.
Good morning, Rick. How are you doing this morning?
You got a big week on the island this week.
Holy moly, we sure do. I tell you what, Rick, excitement is in the air out here.
literally.
Exactly, literally.
Y'all have prepared for it well. Tell us about the trolley service, because that's so critical that you don't have to worry about parking in casino parking because of the trolley in that parking lot. Y'all have made it to where people can spread out a little bit and still get to that core area.
Right. I'm glad you brought that up, because we saw Casino Beach parking lot filled up by about 5:30 a.m. last year. But to your point, we've got trolley service that runs Friday and Saturday pretty much all day. The trolleys begin at 7:30 on Friday morning, and they can pick you up from Park East or Park West, and they will bring folks to Show Center. So if you don't make that Casino Beach parking lot, by all means, head out to Park East or Park West, and the trolleys will pick you up. Immediately after the show, they will line up and deploy back to those parking areas so you can get to your cars and back off the island. And that, like I said, there will be three trolleys on Friday doing that. And then on Saturday, we actually pick up seven buses, so there will be a total of 10 units running folks back and forth between Park West and Park East on Friday, on Saturday.
Now, the secret that I like to tell people, if Saturday's too much for you, the practices on Thursday and Friday are just as good. I mean, it is, you get to see the whole show.
Absolutely. So on Thursday, it's just the Blues practicing, and then on Friday, of course, we call it dress rehearsal, and that's really the full show, but it is dress rehearsal, and so that has the amazing civilian acts as well as the Blue Angels. And so, to your point, Thursday and Friday are great days to see it as well. And if you want to see something different, that starts tomorrow morning with Breakfast with the Blues, and they're out and about in the air and kind of setting their points for the show days.
Okay.
And that's a pretty interesting thing to see as well.
I guess the voice you're listening to is Lee Davis. She's the executive director of Santa Rosa Island Authority. Lee, this is a big week for y'all, but the summer's been busy altogether for the beach. Y'all are having a banner summer so far.
We are. We're so excited. We really do feel like, you know, we're back, if you will, and coming out of the pandemic, and folks are just, even with some of the things we're seeing with gas prices and everything else, the summer has been good, and we've got lots of people visiting Pensacola Beach.
And, you know, and this is a time, a reunion for a lot of families. This is a tradition, and to not have lost it and continue to have this is sort of the, the 4th of July is big, but for a lot of us, this is the height of the summer is this air show and really this entire week. I know the stress on you and your staff is tremendous, but this is where y'all really shine. Y'all have done such a great job with this, oh gosh, over the years.
Right. I have to give kudos to Robbie Schrock. She's kind of our master of all things Blue Angels, and you know, it's kind of partly why we got the show in November is because we have this amazing game plan in place that Robbie has developed over the years, and certainly with our community partners like Escambia County Sheriff's Office and Escambia County Public Works. I mean, it really is a team effort out here, obviously led by SRIA, but we couldn't do it without our partners for sure.
Well, great. Lee, I wish you all the luck this week. It'll be a great one, and thank you so much for coming on this morning.
Thanks, Rick. Have a great day.
All right, you too.
Bye-bye. Right,
goodbye. Lee Davis, Santa Rosa Island Authority. This is the big week. It is the one that the summer, everything heads to this point. And then it starts to level off a little bit after that. But this is a huge week, so keep that in mind. And again, if you can – the Blues, but you'll be able to see them and hear them all if you're downtown, you know, all week. But going out to the beach for the show is part of Pensacola. So please keep that in mind. There's we were talking about Lincoln Park, their neighborhood. They're going to have a show. We'll talk about that, of course. Remember, you cannot put dirt on the street. No ammunition, no explosive. You cannot put, used vehicles, you know, so please, because people can get confused, at least put your used vehicle in the yard so they know not to pick it up. So just be careful about that. Seeing as anything else going on that you got on your list for going on right now?
Well, we had, because it was the 4th of July weekend, we did have the hot dog eating contest, you know, happening over the week, the Nathan's hot dog eating contest, 63 hot dogs. And it's Joey Chestnut who wins it every year.
Every year,
yeah,
right.
Pretty much.
What a pig. What a pig.
And Tom Cruise turned 60, too.
And someone else had a birthday today.
My mom.
Yes, that's right. She turned 61.
Yeah.
She and Tom are the same age, pretty close, went to school together. Actually, we were in flight school together. So
still flying, too.
She's still flying. Yeah. A lot of people don't realize that. She was on that other plane. That in the show still does the stunts that she did before. 10 years ago there was the Battle of Mobile in Pensacola over the aerospace industry. And this is a little part of this, you know, Mobile Press Register, they announced at the beginning of July 2012 that Airbus was going to come to Mobile. They were going to invest $600 million at Brooklyn field, the old air base there, and they were going to build an aircraft assembly plant there. They're going to employ 1,000 full-time workers and hopefully start rolling out planes. This was in 2012, start to begin assembling planes in 2015. So I want to check and see what happened. Well, it did. It worked. They do have 1,000 jobs. They are doing that. They just this year, they're going to add a third assembly line and create another 1,000 jobs. They just announced that this past May. Meemaw, Governor Ivey, announced that. So that has worked. But Mobile was upset with Pensacola as this announcement was rolling out because they got wind that a Pensacola delegation, which was Lewis Baer and Scott Luth, John Asmar, who was chief of staff for Mayor Ashton Hayward, were over in Mobile meeting with ST Aerospace who had an overhaul facility over there in Mobile, were meeting with them trying to lure them to the Pensacola area. And they were upset about it. And they went to the Mobile, whining to the Mobile press register about it. Today we know that ST is here. We've created a brand new industry here of aerospace maintenance, repair, and overhaul, MRO. By the time they complete all the work, they're finishing the second hangar, hopefully by the end of this year. They're going to start with other hangars on the other side of the runway there. And they will be, we will be the second largest, if not the largest, MRO campus in the United States. They've already picked up one client. Of course, they've been doing UPS. They've starting to sign up other commercial airlines are hooking up with them, as this is where they're going to go. We've seen the growth at the airport. We've seen this happen. So we have seen that has happened with us. And it's going to end up being more than 1,000 jobs for us, surely, when this thing completes up. Could be as much as 2,000 or 3,000 jobs. But that was this week, 10 years ago, Mobile was getting excited about Airbus, and they were worried about losing ST. And they still have an ST, still has a facility over there, but we're going to be the bigger part of that operation. So that is, 10 years ago, a lot was going on here. So it's kind of interesting just to go back and look at those things. We're working on the issue for this week. It's coming out. I had a great conversation with Jager Williamson last week. I think you got, so the story really tries to understand how this guy, this down-to-earth electrician family, electrical engineer, county commissioner, goes to Tallahassee, not with a lot of money. What happens is people go to Tallahassee with a lot of money, get leadership positions because they can spread it around, help, buy votes for them to get leadership positions. Jager did it by just being Jager. We have Commissioner Lumen May and Stephen Berry both weigh in on him. You hear Jayer's, his own philosophy in his own words, how he went about it and how it clicked. And what he thought about the institution of the Florida House. Really fascinating interview. I got it in a story. It'll be in this week's issue. We know today, and I mentioned it earlier, and I want to mention it again, community health, they've got the vaccine available for children 5 and under. It's 6 months up to 5 now can get the vaccine. And they're doing it in probably the most responsible way to do it, taking all the politics out of it. It's between the parent and their doctors, their pediatrician. You get to sit down with the pediatrician, ask all the questions, ask what they think. What's going on here, how it can help, what the risks are, what the benefits are, but you get to do it in a doctor's office. So that's how community health is doing it. I hate this has become such a political issue. I sincerely do, because I feel like this is most, we see doctors being punished because they believe the vaccine is good. They've been removed from state boards in this cancel culture of out there that people have to cancel people that don't believe what they believe are going to go against, have facts that go against their opinion. But that's happening in our state government now. But this is great, the way that community health is doing it. So it's between you and the doctor. You can go, if you're already a patient, just go ahead and call the clinic that you go to with community health, and they'll set you up for an appointment. And you can get the vaccine or not, but you get to meet with a doctor. If you're not, call their vaccine call center and set up an appointment, and they'll get you with a doctor. They've got appointments available. It's just started today. So I know they have appointments available. This can be done in the way it should be done, with you talking to a doctor and listening to a doctor and making the decision. The thing about parents' rights is that parents have the right to do this. They have a right to get their child vaccinated if they believe that's the best thing to do. If they have a right to a lot of things. It doesn't go just one way. It doesn't mean they have a right to do what you tell them to do. And we got to get, we got to go back to facts. All right, we also have the sales tax holiday for recreational items. If you want to buy a ticket to an event in the state of Florida between now, it will be between now and the end of the year, you can buy it this week without having to pay sales tax on it. So if you want to do a music event that's later, you want to buy your symphony tickets. You want to buy opera tickets. You want to buy little theater tickets. You can go ahead and buy them now. Sporting events. Buy your, you know, if you want to buy, you know, tickets to go to, you know, the Florida Gators or the Seminoles, you can do that right now with, as long as the event happens between now and December 31st and not have to pay any sales tax on it. So go ahead and think, if there's something out there you want to go see this year that's in the state, you can save some money on it. So that, to me, is probably the biggest thing that sort of slips through there. You can, so it's an opportunity to do that. So take advantage of it. But you can buy swimming stuff, goggles, swimsuit, swimming masks, snorkels, you know, inflatable chairs, floats. You can buy safety flares, coolers, oars. There's a limit on the dollar amount you could spend, but there are a lot of things that are out there available. I'll tell you what, I'm going to put this link on the blog. We'll do it.
Just wanted to point out that Weird Al Yankovic is coming to the Sanger Theater, so if you want to go ahead and buy your tickets, you can do that.
All right. Good. Thank you. We appreciate that.
Just want to point it out.
That public service announcement from Cena Madison. The other thing, but the thing that doesn't isn't on the list is beer. What bigger recreational event for a holiday, for the 4th of July weekend than beer, but it didn't make the list. But fishing equipment, camping supplies, insect repellent, sunscreen, bicycles, helmets, you know, binoculars, it's just a lot of grills, outdoor grills. You can buy it up to a certain amount of money, but you can get sales tax taken off of it. So all these things are available. This is called Freedom Week. So I'll get this link up there for you. William Reynolds is already ahead of me. He's got it on his blog, northofscambia.com. But this goes through Thursday, so you only got a couple more days left. All right, we're going to go ahead and bring back the interviews we did in the first part of the show. Tim will come in. You'll get to listen to what we talked about, and we'll be back tomorrow. We are Real News with Rick Outson, and thank you for listening.